You know what time it is, no matter where you've been. So let's do it again. Listen up and let the sun shine in. We've got soul training. Time to practice what you preach. Ooh, yeah. Yes, we do. We've got soul training.
And here's Daniel, Alan, and Joe.
Hey, Daniel, what size umbrella do you have?
What size? You never know where you're going.
You got a purse size, or you got like a golf bag size?
Yeah, no, the umbrella that we most often use is like one of those full size, like it's like a cane, mm-hmm. You know, when it's not being used as an umbrella. Full coverage. Full coverage.
What about you, Joe? You have the little bag one or the big one?
You know, we've got an assortment, but usually I try not to go out in the rain if I can help it.
Well, I've got the reason I like umbrellas. That's in addition to my love for pens and Reese's cups and peanut butter. I love umbrellas. A lot of people don't know that. I've got one.
That's
brown.
New. Yeah, that's new information.
It is. I've got one brown eye, and one green eye, and I love umbrellas. The reason why I talk about umbrellas, you remember the toy company Mattel?
Yeah,
we've got a couple of those little ones by the back door that looks like they were made by Mattel. So when I use one of those, it barely covers my head. Then I've got another one umbrella that I really like. I got from a Horizons camp at Freed Hardeman University. It's a big one. And when I use it, if a big puff of wind were to come by, I mean, I would look like Mary Poppins. I mean, it would pick me up. It's that big of an umbrella. And so what does umbrellas have to do with our podcast other than that we've kind of unfolded a new trait about all of us?
There's a new layer to that. Right. The hour.
You never know what's going to pop up.
You never know. See, and usually within my intro, Daniel shows up pretty quick and that's good. That was real good. You know, I'm just because I want to be fully covered with all everything that we do. But umbrellas, why do we have umbrellas? It's a full coverage, as Daniel's already alluded to us. But with umbrellas, there's a lot of things that fall under an umbrella. So we have another special guest with us today, Scott Bradford. He serves as one of our elders here at South Green Street. What does that have to do with umbrellas? Leadership is like an umbrella. You know, it looks simple, but it's really not. It's very complicated because there's so much that contained under that umbrella.
And did you just say that Scott looks simple, but he's not?
No.
I said he looks like an umbrella.
Looks humble. He looks very humble. Like umbrellas are humble looking, most of them. And Scott's a very humble individual. He serves as one of seven elders for our congregation. I know the world, if you use the word elder, I even know in my community, in our little old spot in the world here, if I talk about elders in my workplace, people automatically think about people who look like Colonel Sanders, you know, little old man with a cane, mustache, gray hair, all those things. But you got Scott here, who's a young-looking guy. He's a real young-looking guy, but he is an elder. So we're going to talk about leadership and all that how they serve kind of like an umbrella. They cover so many things to try to help all of us stay protected from the world, but also keep us moving in the right direction. Do you like how I finished strong there?
Yeah, I liked how you did this. I totally didn't know where you were going to connect it with elders and umbrellas, but maybe that's the title of this episode, Elders and Umbrellas.
And it's not just one size fits all. You got to have qualifications.
That's right. That's right.
That's true. Not all umbrellas are created equal, right?
They're not.
Yeah, my wife's got one that's leopard print, and for some reason, whenever I need an umbrella, that seems to be the only one that's available, and it's tiny, and I look like the biggest goober walking around in the little leopard print umbrella.
I've had a few of those female umbrellas by accident, and people will remind me, like, man, I love your umbrella, you know.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
I've actually accidentally shot myself with the little umbrellas. They're pretty, the back spring in them are pretty powerful, and you hit that trigger and knocks a breath out of me sometimes when I'm not ready.
You know, speaking of leopard print, you know, it's very difficult to be the first person to see leopard printed items, because when you see them, you know, they've already been spotted.
Okay. On that note,
There's no charge for any of this.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing we'd be refunding folks. So in full disclosure, those that don't know, Scott is my father-in-law, so I'm forever indebted to him for a allowing me to, I guess, become a part of his family. And so thank you, Scott, for that publicly. I'm on the record thanking you. Nobody can take that away.
Well, thank you, Joe. You're very make good. Sure, make sure very you're good in son-in-law.
Make sure you're on the record, because a couple of times Joe got me and Daniel complaining about our wives, and he recorded it.
No.
It's going to show up somewhere.
I have not complained about my wife. Don't you put that in.
Or not complain, but about. I think we had to do something.
No, we need to get back to this.
Yeah, it'll show up.
Yeah. No, y'all weren't complaining about your wife. I took something out of context that made it sound like you were.
See, and I led you right into that. You're right, Joe. So when it does show up, you took it out of context. I've got it on record.
I took it out of context. Anyhow, well, the purpose of this episode, I guess I was kind of the one that came up with the idea of this. There's a lot of confusion about leaders out there and leadership, about who oversees the church, who oversees this group of worshipers. We've got, well, for example, there's several different governing agencies out there. The Baptists have the Baptist Convention. Methodists have General Conference or a couple others. Catholicism, they've got everybody over at the Vatican, the Pope and the Cardinals. And our Jehovah's Witness friends and neighbors, they're governed by folks, the governing body out in Utah. But we don't see in the Bible necessarily those sorts of arrangements. We've got the apostles there, but see last episode for how that went. Two episodes ago for that. So we don't have that type of governing body anymore. And so what I want to get to the bottom of is, what's the deal with all this? How come we don't have these things prescribed in Scripture, yet we do have, in reality, these sorts of bodies? And now, is that a biblical approach, or is there another approach that might be more aligned with Scripture?
And you want me to talk on that or our special guest?
I don't care. I asked the question. I can't answer it, too. So one of you guys.
I mean, I know it's inexpensive, but he is on, here with us. He's costing spending some time with us, so.
Well, Daniel, why don't you go first, and we'll all chime in there.
Okay, so as we look at the pattern of the biblical church, the New Testament church, they didn't have any sort of hierarchy outside of the local congregation. Each congregation was autonomous. They had their a fellowship together. There was unity, but there's not any kind of governing bodies that regulates all these different congregations. And that's something that sort of happened just over time and developed. You have like the churches in the more dominant cities began to influence area churches in their region. And then the leaders of those churches began to be viewed as kind of leaders over the entire region. And then you would have within the eldership of those churches, one becomes more prominent, one elder becomes more prominent. Even today, sometimes you get a, quote, head elder unofficially, where one elder can kind of dominate an eldership. And that's not ideal when that happens. But so that would happen. And then he kind of becomes like this bishop that is exerting unofficial influence over an entire region. And before long, that unofficial influence becomes official influence. And that's sort of how, rough and dirty, the way that this hierarchy sort of develops. And all that happens long after the New Testament. None of that is a part of the biblical plan. That's all man's additions to the church's organization, mostly from their own sense of expediency, their own sense of maybe some sense of being power hungry on the part of some individuals, and maybe just a sense of practicality from others. But if we're following the New Testament pattern, we have to cut out those things and try to restore New Testament Christianity as much as possible.
And so the leaders that we do know about that are approved in Scripture are
elders. Yeah, each congregation has elders, and that's something that happened very, very early on. And Paul, on his very first missionary journey, he goes through planting congregations. And the second leg of his first missionary journey, he comes back through those same congregations. And Acts chapter 14, verse 23 says, when they had appointed elders for them in every church, having prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they believed. So after that, the second half of that first missionary journey, he's going back through and appointing elders in every congregation. So that's the biblical pattern, is that each church would have their own set of elders that oversees and governs them.
And we can read about qualifications for elders a couple places.
I like Titus chapter 1.
Titus 1, starting around verse 5. And for the sake of time, I think maybe we should just allow our listeners to go read that, because I do want to get to asking Scott some questions here. And then you've got 1 Timothy 3 that has qualifications for elders. But real quick, if we can briefly go over, here in the Church of Christ, particularly, we call them elders. Mm-hmm. But there's several names, and sometimes that leads to different levels of confusion. We call them elders, but it's also within our rights to call them shepherds, mm-hmm. bishops, mm-hmm. pastors,
sure.
overseers.
Yep.
Leave anything out?
Presbyters, but that's kind of the same thing. You hit most of the common ones.
And there's some confusion out there in the religious world about, we hear the word pastor a lot. Well, as we read Scripture, we know that that is synonymous with those other terms that we've just mentioned. And so we don't really call them pastors. We call them elders, but we're well within our rights to call them pastors. Not necessarily our minister mm-hmm. that we call a pastor. We call this group of men, the eldership, the overseers, they are the pastors.
We just don't typically, because it's confusing the way the word is commonly used.
Yeah, outside of the Church of Christ, there's some confusion there. Well, the minister is called the pastor.
Right.
We also know whenever the apostles were going around setting up elderships, they set elders in place. There was a plural.
That's right.
There. A lot of times we see with congregations outside the Church of Christ, there'll be a singular pastor that oversees everything. And so I just wanted to, I'm not trying to put down anybody, right. any of our religious friends out there, but there's some confusion over that. But now, if we can, I would like to kind of switch gears. We've talked about elders. We've talked about the qualifications, what biblical church leadership is. Now, we have one of these men in here with us that I think a lot of. We're going to pepper him with questions and see how this goes. So
he'll be fine. He's already well seasoned.
That was better than your last one.
Yeah, you want? I didn't introduce. Tell everybody who you are, Scott.
I'm Scott Bradford. I live here in Glasgow, Kentucky, and I've been an elder for approximately 25 years or so. It's a wonderful opportunity here to speak to Daniel's friend, and I'm thrilled to be here. And to Joe's point about the elders overseeing the flock. As opposed to someone in a regional setting. In 1 Peter 5:2, it says, shepherd the flock of God that is among you. If you're shepherding someone, you've got to know who they are. You can't be over an entire group of churches and know the people. It's difficult enough for the seven elders here to shepherd 400 people. It's terribly difficult, but anyway, that's my little bit for, you know, the shepherding that's among you. There's a book out, I don't know who the author is, that They Smell Like Sheep, which is a book about elders and how they should be incorporated and be involved in everyone's life that they oversee. Pepper away, boys.
Okay.
All right, so I guess let's start with, what advice would you give to maybe our younger people that would like to be preparing themselves for the role of elder one day? How can they get on the right path for that job?
Well, I think the first thing, obviously, is study. You know, they've got to be men of the Word,
and they have to. One of the big responsibilities, Alan is teaching a class on Titus, and his main point is there are wolves out that are looking to infiltrate with false teaching. And if you don't know the word, you don't have any way to defend the flock. And in Titus, you know, what came in was within, not without. So the elders are responsible for what's being taught, and where it's being taught, how it's being taught. So it's, you know, we defend the flock, I think, is one of our major, you know, roles.
Sure.
One thing that it's always, I don't know if it's puzzled me, but it's concerned me a little, is that it's an important job. The well-being and the, to some extent, the eternal destination of folks in the flock, so to speak, rest upon the shoulders of the eldership. It's your responsibility to oversee these folks and make sure things that are taught here are appropriate and to help maintain their faithfulness. That's a stressful gig.
It takes a lot of prayer.
Yeah,
you know, we can't do it on our own. No way in the world.
But well, that's what I was wondering is if you have that level of stress, you've got the stress of the congregation on you. It's not something you necessarily take a vacation. If I have stress at work, I can say, forget it. I'm taking the next 2 days off.
Yeah.
I'm going to go fish or whatever. As an elder, it's tougher to do that.
It is. There's a lot of sleepless nights where you worry about someone and their situation. But there again, it's a joyous job in that you can see people grow and become stronger in their faith. And, you know, that is a reward unto itself. So,
well, what's something that you wish the average church member knew about elders that maybe they don't appreciate all the time?
Well, the one thing that I would like to stress is that the elders are there to talk about issues you have. A lot of times people will go to the preacher because, one, he's friendly as can be. He's approachable, and he talks to them every Sunday through the Word. But the elders need to be the ones that you come to discuss issues, you know, to try, because there's seven of us. And that,
well, here at South Green, but elders anywhere.
Right. But elders anywhere, you know, go to the elders and discuss your concerns. Anything you tell the elders will not go any further than the eldership. And that's another weight, you know, having that responsibility to keep the confidence of people. You know, there are some serious things going on, and it's not something that I can go home and share with my wife. But, you know, if people would come to the elders, and we try to be approachable, but there again, people feel good about their preacher, and they feel comfortable. But part of our job is to reach out and help them to become more comfortable with the eldership and more approachable to the flock.
I really appreciate what you said there, because so many times it seems like elders can be viewed as sort of more of a board of directors. They take care of like the business of the church, whereas really their primary concern is in spiritual things and in shepherding the flock, taking care of, making sure they're spiritually fed. And I appreciate the perspective that you've just brought to about that. What about you've been an elder, what do we say, 25 years?
Yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay,
maybe a little more.
That's fantastic. So you've seen a lot of guys coming into the eldership. So what are some of the challenges that new elders face as they adjust to that role?
Well, most folks who come in as a new elder will kind of sit back and observe for a while, just to I'm sure every eldership has a dynamic but the new elders have to kind of mirror people, you know, and get a mentor that they can talk to. It's always easier to talk to one or two people as opposed to seven around a conference table. But, you know, I think they need to learn. You got to have a thick skin and a short memory. That makes your life so much easier because you're going to have problems. You're going to have people that are not happy with the decision you've made, but they're still brothers and sisters, you know, and you have to pray that you can forget or put in the back of your mind and not hold it against someone who's attacked you. You know, we're to love everyone, especially our brothers and sisters. So that's an interesting part of the job. So,
and you're still shepherding the disgruntled sheep.
Absolutely, like you are, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and they won't always be disgruntled. They need to get something off their chest.
Yeah. It's not a problem for somebody to come and discuss issues at all.
Yeah. Well, I did want to clear up one thing. We've mentioned we've got seven elders here at South Green Street where we're all members. That's not necessarily a requirement to have seven. Only thing is you need a plurality. Mm-hmm. You need more than one. We're fortunate enough to have seven. I've seen congregations have 20, you know, or two or three.
Right.
Alan, did you have something you wanted to add?
Sure. did you notice that my word count has decreased as this time has gone on? You know why?
Yes.
We've got a deal worked out that if I keep it to a three-minute intro, I can't speak until we get 15 minutes in. So it's time now. Just a couple of things
you're going to knock that Coke over on
no,
me.
I tried to move it, and he
snatched it away like it was.
I'm not supposed to be drinking Coke. Don't tell the world. I'm not. Now my wife will
snatch it away like a donut.
I'll edit that to say water.
Water. Drinking water. Right. Lots of water.
Edit it very obviously and awkwardly, though.
Water. Yeah.
I've got a ton. I mean, like, I want to do like a 6-part mini series, you know, on this topic myself, but I've got a ton of questions. But as I listen to you talk, in that book you talked about, They Smell Like Sheep, a guy named Lynn Anderson, not the country music singer, wrote the book. And I've actually got it on the corner of my desk downstairs. And so I've always liked that title, They Smell Like Sheep. But I guess a couple of things I'd like to start with is you mentioned elders being approachable. And you know that I can say this to you, that any questions that we ask or I ask or this podcast is not to – they're not loaded questions. This is for educational purposes. We're not trying to put you on the defensive or anything like that. But I would like to ask, because I have been in some places and some congregations, and I've worked with a lot of different elders. And sometimes I think some elders – I'm not saying they like it, but they have like a certain mystique about them sometimes. And it's almost like you can't look behind the curtain, you know, because the great Oz is there in some ways. And I'm using a metaphor. But what is another way? I think you've touched on some of it, how elders can kind of, who maybe have that persona or that mystique that, hey, I want to, you know, we're going to smell like sheep. I mean, how do you break that barrier or that thought down?
Well, one thing that we do as an eldership here is to try to greet everyone. But what I've done in the last year or two is instead of shaking someone's hand and say, how you doing, I'll sit down and have a conversation with two or three. You know, I won't shake 50 hands, but I'll make contact and good contact with two or three. You know, how are you doing? Is anything we can help you with? So I think that makes elderships more approachable because you know them one-on-one. We have a program here that's called Dinner for Eight. We've had people come to our home. Dinner for Eight is where eight people come together in your home and just get to know one another. But we've had people at our home that didn't know each other because they sat on opposite sides of the church. And that's one way that elders and members can become involved in each other's lives.
And I appreciate that. And I guess the other thing, like I said, I guess I'm trying to, for educational purposes. So that's a really good answer. This is kind of funny. When you all had the conference room downstairs one time, I was getting on the elevator with some folks, and one lady that you all had a sign on the, I've never told anybody this, you had a sign on the door. or sign, or you all had a sign on the door that said, please keep conference room door locked, period, the elders. And she said that out loud. And
it's
she
kind
just,
of ominous, isn't
it? She just kind of laughed, and she said, the elders. And it was like, there, you know, it was like, you know, Darth
like,
Vader.
Like management.
Yeah, management. Yeah, yeah. Thanks. You know, clean the coffee pot. Thanks. You know, stuff like that. And, but to Daniel's point too, again, not, you know, playing devil's advocate or anything. I don't really like that phrase, but you know what I mean, is that sometimes I was kind of called in, not in this our congregation, but years and years ago at another little congregation that my wife and I attended, and it wasn't a big deal. And it was some kind of project we were working on, and it was, we had two elders, and I was a babe. I'm still a growing Christian, but I'm very much a babe in Christ. And I had a short meeting with both elders. And it was over, again, some kind of outreach or something we were doing. And at the end of our meeting, this one gentleman who was a successful banker, he folded his note up. He put his cross pin in his pocket. He said, well, Alan, congratulations. I said, well, thank you. I didn't know what he was congratulating me for. He said, you just had your first official meeting with the elders. And I could tell he really liked his sway, you know, his power, or, you know, or authority, I guess. And so I think that our elders do a really good job of being approachable and being accessible, you know, a relationship from a relationship standpoint. So I appreciate that. I really do mean that. Not because we're here sitting together that you're going to squeal on me about me drinking a Coke. So, and,
that's your word count.
Yeah, that's my. But I think you all do a really good job of that. But in some places, I think some people, like to Daniel's point, sometimes get on the board and they're like all of a sudden. And I've seen it. I've seen some folks change a little. You know, I know you got to have boundaries and guard it a little bit, but you got to smell like sheep. You don't necessarily have to.
Yeah, just because you're an elder doesn't mean you're not also a member of the congregation.
Right.
You just can't bat as much.
So if you're an elder.
Joe missed that.
No, I caught it. I just didn't acknowledge.
He just thought it was a bad joke.
That one was a better one.
It's not over.
It doesn't, yeah, because you're an elder doesn't mean that you no longer participate in things or you no longer serve in ways you used to. You can still lead singing or whatever, just like, because you're still a member. Our time is quickly coming to an end, believe it or not. Maybe we can do a sequel. But I did want to get out. We've talked a lot about elders is the appropriate way that a congregation is overseen. But we did not talk about how does one become an elder. And so if you all can discuss that and enlighten our audience on, let's say I want to be an elder. Well, let's give two scenarios. One, I want to be an elder. I want to, how do I make that happen? Two, I don't want to be an elder, but people are pushing me to be. So if you can handle those two scenarios.
Okay, well, that makes me want to deal with a misnomer before I directly answer that. And that's this idea of desire, because you've talked about a guy that desires the office and a guy that doesn't desire the office. I've heard many people teach that desiring the office is a qualification for the office. And here's why they say that. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, it says, it is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work he desires to do. Then, in verse 2, he starts saying, an overseer then must be above reproach, and starts listing all the things that an elder must be. He does not say that he must have the desire. He just simply said, if he desires the work, that's a good thing that he's desiring to do. Here are the qualifications. Desire is not at all listed as a qualification. Now, somebody might reason, if somebody doesn't want to do it, they're not going to do a good job. Perhaps that's true. But not necessarily. Some of the best leaders in the Bible were not guys running for office. Moses, for example, did not want his job. But once he took it, he did a really great job with it. David wasn't running for king. Matter of fact, he notably did not hasten his kingship on occasions when he could have. But arguably the greatest king that Israel ever had. A man after God's own heart. So a guy may reluctantly take the office and do a fantastic job when he's in the office, and a guy may really want the office, maybe not for the best reasons. So I've seen guys that I think were otherwise qualified that sort of used desire an excuse not to do it. They'd say, well, I'm not qualified because I don't want to do it.
What do you think they're afraid of?
It's a hard job. Mm-hmm. There's lots to be afraid of.
They don't want to be the umbrella.
Yeah. I mean, you're taking on a huge amount of responsibility. You're taking on a huge amount of accountability. There's many, many ways I do not envy
Not to mention the extra time you spend away from home, your family, working on church stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big ask for somebody to be an elder and to do it well. But then back to your original question, most of the time, the way I've seen it done, and I'd be interested to see what Scott's perspective is on this, I'm not really familiar with a lot of guys asking to be an elder and going and saying, hey, I'd really like to be an elder. I'd like to serve in that way. More often than not, they're active in the church. And when the eldership decides they want to expand for whatever reasons, they ask the membership, who do you think would be good men to be elders? Do you think we have other guys that are qualified? And names are put forward. Now, that's not necessarily a biblical pattern for how it has to be done. It's sort of an expedient. The Bible doesn't really lay out how the elders have
there
to be.
There has to be
appointed.
A way somehow to get names up there. The Bible doesn't lay that out.
Exactly. But given the fact that you, as an elder, are going to have to lead the flock, not that the church is a democracy in any way. It's not. But having the support of a significant amount of the flock is helpful if you're going to be asked to lead them. And so it does make sense on a certain level to ask, who are the men of good reputation? Who are the men that fit these qualifications? Typically, there's a series of sermons explaining the qualifications of an elder before elderships expand or are begun. So good teaching by the preacher or whoever is teaching is important on getting men that are qualified. And then the congregation sort of collectively recognizes, hey, this guy and this guy are, really, they meet these qualifications that we've just studied about. And then they're approached. Would you be willing to serve as an elder? There's a lot of ways that can happen, but just practically the way I've observed it, people are asked rather than seeking it. What's been your experience?
We've had one person come to the eldership and say, I would like to become an elder at some point.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely not. My mother, who is 99 years old, I was talking to her about my grandchildren. And the oldest one is Cade, who is 10. And Mama said, I believe Cade will be an elder or a preacher when he grows up. And I thought that was quite the compliment, not only to Cade, but to his parents, because I know I had an older brother. That was one of his big things he wanted to accomplish, was become an elder. And he was not able to fulfill that, but I think that desire needs to be there. And as we talked about earlier, to become an elder, you've got to start early. You can't just all of a sudden say, well, I think I want to be an elder today. You've got to study. I think mentoring is a great thing to do. Having people come into the meetings, elders meetings, and discuss whatever's on their mind, or just sit there and watch, what's the dynamic? How are things discussed? What Bible verses do you come up with on certain situations? And it just makes it easier for the person to know exactly or some parts of what the eldership does. So
I just wanted to, I was going to just drop two names real quick, but Steve Higginbotham, when he was a minister here for over 20 years, I was here at his last sermon, and he talked about his father advised him early on. He said, with your role as minister and your relationship with the elders, not for self-serving reasons, but he said, make the elders your friends. He said, be friends, with them. It's going to make the work go a whole lot smoother and a lot better. I can't remember exactly how Steve said that, but I do remember he said his dad advised him to become friends, but not for manipulation purposes, obviously. And so I always appreciated that. And I've tried to do that to the very best of my ability. And then our friend, Dale Jenkins, Dale, he told us one time, he said, you know, when you complain about the elders, don't do it because you appointed them. You were part of the group that appointed them. And now I can't remember the context he said that, but, basically saying, the point was be careful or make sure. But when you make that decision, make it right. And don't be disgruntled and cause them problems.
Yeah, and something you've kind of alluded to a little bit there, it is very, very important that the elders and ministers should work closely together. They should have a good relationship. They should love one another, and they should work side by side in helping the flock. That's ideal, and more than ideal, it's really vital. It's important. Anyway, so there are so many other things we could talk about, but Joe,
I got a bunch of notes. I got a bunch more questions. I really do.
Joe's already held the timer up to me.
Tried to take my Coke again.
Right. Well, you know, maybe I think there are a lot of other things we could explore. Let's invite our dear listener. What questions do you have about elderships? What questions would you have for elders? And maybe we could solicit a few of those and have Scott back another time.
The quickest way is to find our Facebook page and just message me through there. I usually handle the Facebook page. So if you send a message to the Soul Training Facebook group, that will be me probably responding. This is Joe.
Just search for Soul Training Podcast on Facebook and we'll pop up there. We would love to hear from you about that. So thank you, Scott, for being with us today.
Thank you.
And thank you. Pass our gratitude along to the other elders at the South Carolina State Church of Christ for making Soul Training possible. And thank
before you go into your club, I just want to personally.
He's like almost done.
I'm halfway, pumped.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But Daniel talks about this being evergreen, and so I want this to be evergreen too.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I've told Scott a million times, he's one of the big reasons why that I've been able to grow so much here at our congregation and our other elders. I've had my eyes open because the doors have been opened to attend meetings and my role in those things. And I'll tell you, it's until you attend meetings and see what they deal with, I mean, I still don't have the appreciation that I should, but I have more than I did. So I appreciate all the work that they do. And sometimes it's, us as sheep, we want to stray, and sometimes we want to, complain way more than we should, but they still love us all the same. So.
Well, transparency in an eldership is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it can be hard for elderships to be transparent because they have to deal with so many things that are of a personal nature that they need to be discreet about, but that need to be discreet can lead some elderships to being very, very closed off, and there's kind of an othering between them and the congregation.
I just want to say thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so that's a good thing about this eldership. So again, thank you, dear listener, for letting us be a part of your spiritual journey today. And until next time, keep soul training.
Soul training. Time to practice what you preach. Ooh, yeah. Yes, we do. We've got soul training.
To learn more, you can email us at soultrainingpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can write to us, P.O. Box 503, Glasgow, Kentucky, 42142. That's Soul Training.